House of Grace, dein Podcast zu Hause für die großen und kleinen Fragen und Antworten des Lebens mit Sandra von Sapienski.
So, hi, Rackman. Thank you for coming to my House of Grace podcast. And I'm so honored because I just told you in our talk before that I discovered you on YouTube. And you made my day when I was driving like a long, 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 long drive to Berlin. And I was laughing so hard because of your videos.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah. A lot of those videos. sorry, what are you saying?
I also told you before, I couldn't even open my eyes sometimes, which was kind of dangerous while driving a car. Somehow I managed to go drive safely to Berlin. It was hilarious. And I was like, oh my God, I have to meet this person. He's so funny.
I apologize for that. First of all, I'm so sorry that you had to sit through that nonsense while in traffic, but I'm glad I gave you, at least you had a pleasant distraction. Of all the nonsense.
I had an amazing time. It was probably the most funniest drive to Berlin ever.
on the Autobahn, so right?
On the Autobahn, yeah. How do you experience Autobahn driving in Germany? Because you come from the US originally, right? Mm-hmm,
yeah, originally from America.
And we all know that you are driving so slow.
Yeah.
Like small little tortoise.
For German standards, yes. Everything's slow for German standards.
It's so slow.
But I first time on the Autobahn was first time in Germany in 2011, but never really drove on it. But the first time I was like in a car, I remember I was supposed to take a train to meet a friend in Hanover. And trains all got canceled because it was just a giant storm. And I've never seen, if you want to see Germans upset, have the trains just be canceled. And everyone was so mad, so angry, and people were trying to figure out where to go. And the only way to get from where I was to Hanover was with a blah, blah car. And I think mm-hmm. this is a little bit after I was in Berlin. And you get a blah, blah car. It's like basically like a carpooling. And these two kids were like, yeah, we'll take you. And I was like, all right, yeah, all right. So I'm with a friend. We get in and it's just like a tiny Toyota Corolla on the Autobahn during this giant storm. And they are going so fast. And I nearly thought I thought I was going to die. I was like, this is it. This is how I die on the Autobahn. But I like it though. There's been, after posting the video, probably the one that you saw about dating a German girl.
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah. After posting that, there's like all this, in the comments, there's all this like discussion and debate over how much better the Autobahn is than other driving interstate highways. And it's kind of funny just to see how patriotic Germans got over the Autobahn. It's faster. It's more efficient. Don't make fun of us.
And I used the lift yesterday in a building. And when I stepped out, I said, auf Wiedersehen. And I could remember that you had this in one of your pieces as well.
So you did it.
That it's so German. Yeah. Yeah. I just noticed when I said, auf Wiedersehen, when I left the lift,
that's great.
That I said, auf Wiedersehen.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's just in Germany where you do this, right? Where you go in and you said, hello. And then you were standing there pretending you don't see each other. And then you leave and they said, auf Wiedersehen.
Yeah. That's the thing about Germans. They don't necessarily, I've noticed in my experience, Germans are less likely to do the bullshit small talk that Americans do.
Hi, how are you? How's it going? Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I bought a new car. Oh, that's great. I just met you, but tell me your life story.
And Germans won't really do that, but they do have the pleasantries down. So if you walk into an elevator, you don't know anyone. It depends on where you are. Frankfurt, this is a little bit more common because I guess it's more of a business city. And you walk in and they're like, hello, 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 hello. Everyone kind of just looks down at their phone. And then you leave, like, choose, okay, check out, ciao. And it happens anywhere. You go into a locker room at a gym, same thing. You know, like, I didn't talk to these guys when I was training. We didn't even make eye contact with each other, nothing. And then, you know, they just get dressed, leave, and this guy I never met, he's like, ciao. And I feel like the stupid one, you know, I was just bye. Do I know you? No? Okay. See you. Tschüss. So, yeah, this weird customs, but it's like it breaks the stereotype that Germans are like very, you know, mean, you know, the negative stereotype that Germans are kind of mean or whatever, unpolite. And I don't think that's the case. I think Germans are quite polite and quite friendly, but, you know, they don't go out of their way and go over the top like you can see in America where it's, how's it going? Yeah, how you doing? There's not that, but they do make an effort to make you feel comfortable. And that's why I like Germany. And I lived there for like maybe 6 years, 7 years. And you find that people just tend to be very authentic and are willing to kind of go deep with you. After just knowing them for a few months or so, they're willing to talk about like real things that are going on in your life versus just the superficial, which is what I'm used to back in the States.
How did it come that you moved to Germany?
Germany. Well, I was in San Francisco actually first, and I wanted to kind of find an equally as kind of liberal, crazy party place. So I found Berlin. But I was looking at what you do, and you teach Tantra, is that right?
Yeah, the boring part, the tantric philosophy.
Yeah.
And the meditations, because the new Tantra thing is this is something which was made up in the 20th century. And they just took ideas from Tantra and some sexual exercises from different traditions,
right,
and put it together. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's, it can be really fun, but it doesn't have any or not so much to do with their real Tantra, because the real Tantra is like a religion with their with nine main sects and so on. So,
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to read more about that, because when I saw that you taught that, I realized you were teaching one that seemed a bit more wholesome than the one that tends to get like the most attention online. When you say Tantra, people immediately are thinking, yeah, like, oh,
that's why I wrote Tantric Yoga, because when I had in my Instagram bio just Tantra, I got messages DMs. About, oh, would you like, can I have like a tantric massage? I would like to have such. It would be such a beautiful thing to get tantric massage from a beautiful woman like you. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
That's terrible. Yeah, yeah. I would like a tantric massage. You know, I'm so tired from driving on the autobahn all the time. I just need a tantric prostate massage for my prostate, because I'm sitting on my prostate all the time, and you know, just a gentle massage. Nothing weird. Yeah, it was. Tantra, from what I first learned about it, was more of like the sexual kind of side of it.
You had a date with her, because I told you that I have seen every single video of yours.
Oh, stop saying that.
And you had a date with a tantric sex goddess.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about it?
No, not really. You can watch it online. It's called When You Have Sex on Your Period.
Maybe a teaser.
Yeah, When You Have Sex on Your Period. And you do it anyway, or when she's on her period, you do it anyway. So I was in San Francisco, and this is like, I was like 25, 26. And I was really trying to find myself, for lack of a better word or cliche. And when you're a young boy, finding yourself means like bang as many chicks as I can. That's basically pretty much a young guy's, average young guy's journey. And in San Francisco, I was dating a lot of girls, you know, one at a time mostly. And they would, one sort of told me I wasn't really that good in bed. And she kind of let it slip. And I called a couple exes and I was like, you know, what'd you think of the, and they're like, oh, I mean, and you start to think about it and you realize, you know, I never really learned how to be a good lover. So in San Francisco, they've got this company called One Taste. And I found out about it through Tim Ferriss's book. And they teach female orgasm, and they have this kind of process that is quite professional given for what it is, you know, and they sort of teach you how to stroke the woman and make sure that you're focusing on her rather than yourself. And it's a practice that can be done without having sex afterwards. And there's no kind of expectation you're going to have sex, and it's quite standardized, even though that takes the romance out of it, which is kind of what they're trying to do. They're trying to help women get in touch with their physical side and help men learn, or their partners learn, how to please women. So I was like all up in this group, and, you know, taking classes and stuff. And I kind of learned, you can sort of learn how to be, I guess, quote, good in bed. And so from there, I decided to just go to Europe and continue this like journey of finding myself, and was more or less like just having dating disaster after dating disaster, because I wasn't really finding what I wanted, which in the end was, you know, on the inside, so to speak. Like, I had to find things that I liked doing that I was passionate about, not just like going and trying to meet women and stuff. And I ended up in Berlin thinking I was going to be a DJ. And I was like, you know, I'm going to move to Berlin. I'm going to be a DJ. That's what you do when you move to Berlin. And then I'm going to have all these parties. I'm going to be so cool. I'm going to be the fucking man. And it was just, it was pretty crazy. Ended up meeting that tantric sex goddess in Berlin, and she was American, but she moved there like a lot of them do. And for that, what happened with that girl was, she was really into period paintings and would like to, save her blood in a jar in a refrigerator. And then, to express herself, she would take out the period paint blood and make period paintings. And
it's very normal in my Instagram bubble.
It is. You know, like, I was like, I'm, you know, I'm here. I'm going to practice non-judgment, you know, I'm just going to sit here and smile and pretend like I'm okay with this. And it was nice because it makes you like kind of respect people who have different interests, you know, because that's not the first thing that I would do. But I was like, this is insane. But she is really passionate about it. So I was like, well, come like a 5-year-old that shows you a photo or a painting that they made. You're like, oh, wow, look at that. That's adorable. Look at that. But you know, it's like, who am I to judge? So it was, that was kind of an eye-opening experience. Yeah.
And I really like that you were so open and I have the feeling that you're saying like, okay, this is the experience. And you just go with the flow and see what happens. But it turns out that there are sometimes funny stories coming out of that. And so this is how your program, or your first program, because now you change it, but this is how your first program came into the world, like because of your worst dating experiences?
Exactly, yeah. I was just collecting all these stories. And didn't realize it at the time, but it was just kind of just going through just drama after drama. And I was basically trying to find love, and would just stumble along the way. You know, I would try to find love by going, didn't know what I was doing. So I'd go out in Berlin, go to nightclubs, trying to find the one at a place called Berghain, which is this this massive techno club.
You might know.
Well, like probably the worst place to find the one, but you know, you do what you got to do. And I was waiting in this long line to get in. And when you get up to the bouncer, he's got all these piercings and tattoos in his face. Have you ever been there, Berghain?
Mm-hmm. No.
And the guy's intimidating, and he's just staring at you, and he's like deciding your fate. And he kind of nods his head towards the door, and I just go down this hallway. And when you're inside, the music is like, it's fun to listen to when you're concentrating on work, or maybe when you're driving on the Autobahn, like, boom, boom, boom. So you're like, you're kind of intense and in the focus, but to meet someone and to dance, it's not that great. You know, it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Like, hi, how are you? How's it going? Nice to meet you.
And I ended up meeting this girl who was a dominatrix, and I ended up going to her dungeon. I didn't put the story online, actually. I ended up going to her dungeon a few days later. And a dungeon is like basically a place where these girls will, you know, like dominate men.
Yeah.
And men pay for this shit. And I was so desperate for friends that I was like, well, you know, screw it. I'm going to go and just see what it's like. And I've watched this kind of porn before, so I was like curious to see what it's like in person. And so I go there, and it's next to a Reve. And it looks like they're open at normal business hours. You can't go and and hide and go in the middle of the night with a jacket on and a disguise. Yeah. Like, you got to go past mothers who have children in their baskets to walk into this dominatrix place, which looks like a dentist's office. And you sit there and it just reminded me of this scene from Killing Eve, because there's a bunch of like guys and we're all kind of nervous. And, you know, one guy says like,
you look a little bit nervous, but don't worry. These dominatrix are very, they're very nice. And then the other guy leans over. He's like, I hope they're not.
So I go into this room and then I meet her. And the thing with Berlin is a lot of people are moving there and they're like, they're kind of early on in their careers, so to speak. A lot of them are freelancers and they're not necessarily like, you know, professionals that have kind of established career. A lot of them are just starting off. And she was one of them. So she was a dominatrix, but she was quite like, she's trying to be like a sustainable, almost like vegan dominatrix. And so just her whole shtick was like, oh, you've been a bad boy. You know, have you recycled today? And I'm like, no, I didn't compost either. Oh, you're going to get smacked with my whip that's made of sustainable hemp. And, you know, so I'm like sitting there saying like, this is the most bizarre experience, but I'm in the deep down trying to find love and just going about it in all the wrong ways. And as a result of me trying to just find love and find the one, I just collected all these stories along the way and then made a show about it called True Dating Stories and found out that a lot of other people are also going through the same thing. You know, they're deep down, everyone, I would say, wants to find love. And
sure, and, who doesn't want to?
And then you go on dates to find the one and it doesn't work out. And then that's your story. And so many people could relate to that. So we started it first in Berlin, where people have a ton of fucking disgusting stories. And then we did it around Europe. And then we started doing it first around Germany, then around Europe, and then around the world. So 2017 is when we started doing it in Europe. And then 2018, we did 300 shows in like 60 countries. 2019, a similar pace. And then 2020 hit and the pandemic hit. And so then we had to stop. Mm. Yeah. But I recorded that one video, the dating the German girl, after we started again in 2020. So pandemic hit, we stopped, and then 2020 started again, and then recorded that dating a German girl. Because I did have experience dating your kind. You guys are so special. You're so good.
Would you say there are some certain aspects which are typical German when you date German women?
Yes. Yeah. It's always tough to generalize because people are like, I have one friend. She's not like that. Shut up. Your theory is debunked. I have, I've noticed a few things. I've dated women from all around the world. And I say like my first sort of true love was a German girl. And that was 2017. I was there for a while, you know, in an on and off relationship with Berlin for like 6-7 years. And then I met her in 2017. She was walking from McFit, back when they called it McFit. I think it's McFit or it's John Reed now. So she was walking, I was with a friend and he's from Tanzania. And so we're like talking about doing some shows. And then I just see her walk past me on a sidewalk. And I was like, he's, you know, he's talking about, you know, his childhood, like in Tanzania, you know, things were hard for me. I was like, man, would you be okay if I just go talk and come out? He's like, go ahead, do your thing. And so I go and I talk to her. I run after her, which kind of sounds kind of creepy because I'm like trying to run, but I don't want her to turn around and see me before I get to her. So I'm like, kind of like doing like a light footed run. It just sounds so horrible. But I get to her before she turns around and I was like, hey, it's like, hi, sorry. I just saw you walking. I was like, I have to get your number. I'm on the way to somewhere and I just got to get, she's like, sure, no problem. And she gives me her number. And then I go back to my friend. I was like, dude, he's like, yeah, man, she was pretty attractive. She has black hair, like brown hair, ponytail. And she had like the yoga pants and everything. It was looking so good. And I texted her and then she's like, I was like, hey, you want to get a coffee sometime? She's like, sure, if you like me dressed while I'm in my like crappy gym clothes coming from the gym looking like crap, then we could definitely get coffee. I was like, oh, I like this girl. But she was like very literal. And that's one thing that I noticed about Germans. She's just like straight to the point. She's like, if you like me like this when I'm not looking good, then this could probably work because I'm going to look good for our first date. And she shows up. And I didn't know this at the time, but she's a model. And she was on Germany's Next Top Model. And she was just so stunning that my heart just dropped. Later, I found out that she likes doing this. Like she just kind of, you know, goes around town in a regular dress. But then when she shows up for dates, she just pulls out all the stops to see if the guy can handle it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like, I'm like on my phone when she comes up to me in the Soho house. That's where we were going to meet. Not that I have a membership there at this fancy place, but it just seemed like a nice place to meet so I can impress her. It's like, oh, he's at the Soho house. Nice. Like, no, I was in the lobby. And then she comes over and I look up and it's just stunning. And, I like could barely keep it together. I'm like, hey, hey, hi. yeah. How are you? And we go to get coffee and we hit it off. We took things very slowly. But we dated just for a short amount of time, a few months. But it was clear that given my schedule, given her ambitions in life, that it would be much better for us to be friends. But I did notice, you know, she was like a strong personality, type A, as they call it. And she's German, which makes like her Germanness just like on steroids. She's just super German. And it's so much fun to see it happen. For example, I would show up to her place early so she'd be turned on by my punctuality. That's one of my things I say in the story. And one time she got upset because I was early. She's like, I'm not ready yet. And so then I would just show up early and just wait outside for her. Just like passive aggressively just to piss her off. And I would just wait outside for the exact time that we're supposed to meet. And then I would knock on a door. And going out would be fun because she would, there's certain things that I really loved and respect about German women. And one of them is just the fact that like they would, my friend Paul Salamone says this, that a lot of Germans would rather be correct than have fun. And we were walking past this old post office in Berlin that had this like big dome on top. And she says like, oh yeah, it's a post office. It's no longer there. And they're going to like make it something else. And I was like, it'd be so cool if they made it into like a techno club, you know? And she's like, no, the regulations for this area would not allow that. And I was like, yeah, dude, I'm just saying like, it'd be funny. For example, wouldn't that be cool? She says, yes, I'm sure. But the regulations for this area wouldn't allow that.
It won't happen.
It won't happen. No. So your fun is not going to happen. No fun. But it can backfire though, trying to kind of like play with the German in terms of just if they really like following the rules. Because we were out to dinner one time and at one of my shows, I read a story about how the girl told the story. She said, one time I went to a dinner with a guy and he said, hey, let's dine and ditch, not pay the bill. She says, okay, let's go. And then they run out and then the guy pulls out the receipts. He says, just kidding. I already paid. She says, oh, okay. Yeah, that's funny. Blah, blah, blah. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to try the same thing with, you know, a German woman? So
that would freak me out.
Yeah. We're in Prenzlauberg at this fancy restaurant and we were eating outside. So I thought this is perfect because we can kind of get away, you know, without paying. So she's goes to the bathroom and I pay the bill. And I get the receipt and everything. And then she comes back and she says, oh, should we pay the bill? And I say, you know, instead of paying the bill, why don't we just get out of here and run? She's like, what? And I was like, yeah, come on, let's go. And we had just started dating too. So I was like, come on, I'll be adventurous. You know, I was like, what? You only live once. I was like, let's go. And then I just grab her and start running. And we get to the sidewalk. And she's so exasperated, nearly in tears. She's like, what are you doing? I don't understand. Why would you do something like this? I'm not a criminal. I'm going to go to jail. This is not. And I pull out the receipt. I said, hey, just kidding. Look, I paid already. She's like, that's not funny. And she gets so upset. And that was the last time I did that kind of prank or joke. But in all, we realized it wasn't going to work given our ambitions and stuff, and we're still friends. And it's so strange because, you know, she's, I'm friends with maybe I'd say like half of my exes. I've had about 4 or 5 girlfriends, and I talked about 2 or 3 of them. And she's one that I still talk to. And, you know, I was recently going through a bit of a breakup, and we talked for 2 hours. And she was so insightful and was willing to go to the depths. And that's what she likes doing. She says that. She's like, I don't want the superficial stuff. I like going to the depths. And I just find that I'm more able typically to go to the depths and really kind of sort out some problems and help other people sort out some problems. And I do that more often with my German friends than with my my American friends. So yeah, Germans. You guys have such deep qualities.
Pardon, because it was interrupted.
You guys have such redeeming qualities that I've grown to love and after being in Germany for so long.
Thank you. Do you think that your shows also help to deal with dating and breakups? And do you have the approach that they also should give some insights through humor, or is it just to entertain?
Yeah, it's just really to entertain and to see what, and then whatever you decide to take from it, you can take from it. But really, it's something to entertain. It's something to relate to. Something to help you just forget about all your issues for 2 hours or an hour, however long the show is.
You don't feel alone because you just have this weird dating experiences.
You're not the only one. Exactly. Yeah. You're not the only one. And we find that happens a lot. A lot of people will come to the show and then they'll leave and they're like, oh man, I'm not the only one. For example, I used to tell a story all the time about pegging, where a woman will do the guy up the butt with a strap on. And, you know, but for whatever reason, 5 years ago, it was just totally not okay. But then now, as people have just, it's become popular. And so now men are less ashamed about it, still are kind of ashamed, but a little bit less. And I tell the story about, you know, how I was overcompensating, wanting a girl, wanting to try it. Cause, you know, I've seen it in porn. I was like, well, this might be fun. But then felt feeling so emasculated by it, thinking that if I'm going to do it, I'm going to pick a big dick. That way I feel like I'm being a man about it. I'm going to take the biggest one they have. The
biggest.
Yeah. I'm going to get fucked like a man up the butt. And so by a girl and not gay. And so the girl I was with was telling me, you should probably start small. And I'm thinking, no, man, I'm dude's right. You know, I don't want a small dick.
I want to get the most out of it.
I don't want a small dick. That's gay. I want a big dick. That's straight. And it's just, I say gay straight, not that there's nothing wrong with being gay straight or anything like that in that context, but for the male brain, especially one that was born in 1985, you just grow up with this thing of thinking that you can't do anything effeminate, otherwise it's considered gay, and that's, you just grow up thinking that that's bad. And it's such a unfortunate way of describing things, because it's certainly not gay at all to just have a little bit of prostate stimulation. And if it was gay, it's, who cares? It doesn't really matter. Like, it's not, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, totally.
But it isn't for any straight guys who are interested in doing it. It doesn't mean that you're gay and all of a sudden you like men, and then, you know, you have to like rethink your whole life. And so I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get this biggest one they got. And she just couldn't get it in. And the moral of the story was, you know, if, because I would always ask her for anal, not thinking how much work it takes and how painful it could be if you're not careful. And the moral of the story was, you know, if a guy asks you for anal, just say you first. And he'll learn a bit of empathy in the end. And so I told the story, and as people were leaving the show, you know, a guy would come over to me after every show and be like, man, I thought I was the only one, bro. Thank you, man. He's like, yeah, just use lube, you know, start small. I was like, yeah, bro. Could start like a, I don't know, a Facebook group for first time pecker for dudes. But yeah, in the end, it's, you realize you're not alone. You're not the only one. And for many cultures, talking about dating stories and sex stories in general is mm-hmm. not, is taboo, and people aren't used to doing it. So, when you have a chance to do that at the show, for example, we give people a chance to come on stage to tell a 3-minute story, almost like a mm-hmm. open mic portion of the show. When people do that, it's always my favorite part of the show. And you usually get at least 1 to 2 mm-hmm. just hilarious stories. And my favorite have come from Germany. Frankfurt.
I just wanted to ask you about your favorite one.
Yeah, Frankfurt. Actually is probably to date my favorite. It's hard to say which one's the funniest, you know, you always get that one a lot. Like what's the funniest story, but, Frankfurt is going to be a favorite one today. And, this was like 2017, this kind of short woman, gets up there and, she's proper German. She has glasses on and the room is packed pre-COVID BC. Before Corona. And the energy is like electric. And she's just very quiet. She grabs my phone. She says, you know, well, I don't know how much of a dating story it really is. And that's what makes me like German dating stories or European dating stories in general, because they have this sort of humility to them. Whereas Americans love boasting, you know, like, look, you know, I fucking screw on the ass and poop went everywhere. It's gross. I never called it back. And they have this kind of like bravado to them, your average American telling a dating story at our show. But the Europeans, because English also is their second language, so they're a bit more modest when they're talking about the most disgusting things. And so she says, you know, this guy was into a lot of weird things. And I thought, okay, well, he seems nice. And I'm into weird things also. So, you know, if you've never seen South Park, you know, Mr. Hanky, the pool. Well, anyway, this guy gives me... a speculum, which you use to open up a rectum. And then he gives me a flashlight to look into the rectum. And so he's on all fours facing forward. And he says, okay, stick the speculum in there.
Like very matter-of-factly, like she was just talking about, like she was a doctor giving a medical exam. Yeah. But this is supposed to be, you know, sexual, like fetish.
And so I opened up the speculum and I opened up, put it in his ass and I could see... with the flashlight, you know, Mr. Hanky, in his ass. And so the guy says, I tell him, I say, yeah, I see, you know, poo. And he says, well, you know, don't be weird. Let it out. So I opened it up and the poo came out onto the bed. And,
oh my God.
So it was there, Mr. Hanky, and, you know, he really enjoyed it. And he cleaned it up and, you know, he wanted to have sex, but for some reason the mood was ruined and I didn't want to. Anyway, that's my story.
And everyone was in fucking tears. Everyone, the crew, all the performers, the whole audience just in tears. And it's still my favorite story to date. And it was just so indicative of like just German's comfort level with just talking about these kind of things. And doing it in such a matter-of-fact way. Well, you know, one time I shoved a speculum up there. But, you know, if you just
that
had that...
That time when I freed Mr. Hanky.
Yeah, that's when I freed Mr. Hanky. But if you just had that in America, it's like, he wanted me to put his data to the thing, and it was so gross! Oh, my God! Shut up. But you just have this, like, German kind of reservedness and openness... Especially in terms of sexuality. That's one of the things I like about doing the show in Europe compared to the States. In the States, whatever reason, sexual education is not very good. It's not as good as it is in Germany. I remember watching this documentary about condom usage in teenagers, the U.S. versus Europe. And they went around, they asked these 16-year-olds in the U.S., what would you think of a boy who's your age who had a condom? And they think like, I think he's like a player. Like, he's a weirdo. Like, yeah. And then they asked the same question to Germans who are actually younger, I think like 14. And they asked them, what would you think of, they asked this, a girl, do you have a condom? She's like, yeah, we all do. And the guy's like, can we see it? And he's like, yeah, sure. And she goes into her bag and gets a condom at 14. It was no problem. And they're like, what would you think of a guy who's trying to have sex with you without a condom? And she's like, oh, no way. You know, like of all the guys I know, they all have access to condoms. It's okay. And then this Dutch boy who was 16 was just starting having sex. And his mother said, you know, you can, if you're going to have your girlfriend over, just have sex or, you know, you can be together in my bed. And she's like, I'd rather have him do that than go in some park somewhere or be somewhere else. And the kid, they interviewed him. He was so normal too. He's like, yeah, you know, she came over, we had a little fun. It was good. 16. And even looking at like the STD rates and teen pregnancy, it's just much more of a problem in the States where you have a much more Christian conservative and, you have a lot more of a puritanical kind of repressive nature for this. And it's funny because Americans think like, we're the freest, free love, like we're the freest, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but in some ways still kind of repressed. And sexually, I would say that's one of them. But you would know more about that, I would say, right? In terms of just like sexual education, in terms of teaching tantra.
Yeah, but I do the real tantra, so I'm not so...
Sorry.
I'm not a tantric sex goddess. But I do have a sex workshop for women. Mm-hmm. But it's just 3.5 hours because I was asking myself, what is my sexuality as a spiritual woman? And I do like the neo-tantra stuff, but my sexuality is different. If I would, like every time, I would first do the eye gazing and the yoni blessing and the ritual. Sometimes I just want to fuck. Ask myself, how does it go together? You know, like me liking you porn, just having a different kind of sex than the neo-tantric stuff,
yeah,
which is very. Or I experience it as it's beautiful, it's very honoring and very slow and tender, and this can be really beautiful, but my sexuality is different. And I had the feeling that this is also a role in which we can fall as women, you know, to think just because you're doing tantra or you're spiritual or you're a feminist, you are not allowed to have sex in a certain way. And so what I did with my life was I asked myself in every part, how do I want to look like? How do I want to experience my life? How do I want to live and how do I want to love and how do I want to make sex? And I forced myself to forget everything, like to forget what other people would say if I would mention how I like to have sex, or what other people would say how when I change my looks. Because, for example, I got a boob job last year, and this is very uncommon in the yoga scene. I mean, there are boob jobs, but you're not talking about it. You're going to a jungle retreat for 3 months and then you're coming back and you manifested new boobs. But personally, I like this look. I do want to have extensions. I do want to have a boob job. I do like to train my bum. I like trucking. I like to have sex in a not spiritual way. But still, I meditate and still I write poems and still I'm into quantum physics and, you know, I'm all of that. And I don't want to get categorized. And if I'm going to get categorized, I will be the one who defines it. And that's also why I came up with this sex workshop, which is called Church of Pleasure. Because for me, that's the most important part. Really to enjoy it,
I like
to awaken your senses.
Church of Pleasure.
Church of Pleasure. It's
That's
so
great.
Nice, right? And also, you know, the first task for every woman who takes part in that is to really dress up. Like you should think you are hot as hell. And so usually I wear my Louboutins or Jimmy Choo's sock show and just have very tiny clothes on. And we drink champagne and we spill the champagne all over. Mm-hmm. I try to teach stuff which I called sense neuroplasticity, because usually, you know, when you're doing a sensuality workshop, you're like, oh, no, you should taste the chocolate and really lick it. And how does it taste? But you are not smelling the spoon. Or you are not feeling the texture or temperature of the thing in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And that makes, this is what I'm interested in. Or this is what I experienced, which is really fun, to indulge yourself in your senses.
Yeah.
And really be present. And that's again, kind of spiritual maybe, but it's not the classical stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And also I want to encourage to find your own definition. And this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So if you are into gangbang porn and if you're into, I don't know what, if you are the one who chooses it, and if this is your sexuality and this is something which you define for yourself, that is okay.
Yeah.
And you're still a wonderful woman. You're still a wonderful human. You still can have sex in this way and you can be spiritual. And don't let other put you in boxes.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I talked really a lot, right?
Mm-mm. Hell no. Church pleasure. Shit, sign me up. Amen. Yeah. I confess. I want to go to that. I want to go to that church. That's cool. Yeah. It's nice to hear that, you know, and it's, owning your sexuality is such a good thing. And when you could do that, life gets easier as you do that, because you never really get there. But as you continue to do that, life just becomes easier. Mm-hmm. For me, it was going to those workshops in San Francisco and then just having sexcapades all over Europe. Just helped me learn and be more comfortable with my own body and learn what I like. Sexually. And my German ex-girlfriend, the one I was mentioning before, she taught me so much about that kind of thing. And she would just tell me in her matter of fact way about her ex-boyfriends and what worked for them. She's like, you know, things are getting a bit stale between us. Maybe we try what we did with my ex. She's like, maybe, you know, with my ex, we bought a book and it was like 365 positions, you know, one for each day. And that worked. I still have it. We can try that if you want. And I was like, all right, fine. And she's like, okay, today is March 4th. Let's go. We're going to do the flying crane.
Did it work? Did it work for you?
Yeah. She told me that story, but, one thing she's mentioned, she's like, you know, I feel like you're trying to make me get there. And, I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to get there and I get there. So that part of your brain that's like focusing on, you know, the outcome. So that's a lot of men do. They're like, if some men just don't care, and then other men, they care too much, because when they get there, it's like a high score for them in a video game, like ding, 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 I win. And it's about the guy again. It's not about the girl when you're too focused on making her get there. And so she says, you know, just turn that side of your brain off and be in the moment. And that helped a lot, you know, to get feedback in the middle of doing it, you know. You're like, concentrating. Yeah, like, here I go.
It added a flavor of,
yeah,
I can imagine it added a flavor of play, and then it's not so serious anymore.
Exactly. Like you're allowed to laugh during sex, you know, you can like make jokes and talk and stop and it doesn't have to be this serious, quiet thing from start to finish. Cause like, especially when you watch sex scenes as a kid and, in movies, and you think like, they're never talking and having fun. So you think I have to be serious during sex. I always had that idea that like I can't talk and it has to be super serious. But yeah, you could talk and have fun and all the things. And I've seen that just in terms of differences in dating around Europe. When it comes to just talking about this stuff, Europeans I find to be a bit more open. And then just in terms of dating in general, one of your questions is what dating, do you see dating differences across like countries in Europe? And I've noticed that in the best places where we do the shows and we get the best reactions tend to have the highest rates of STDs. For example, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland have the highest rates per capita of chlamydia. And when we do the shows there, it is so much fun because their concept of dating is different. A lot of Europeans will say, especially Scandinavians, like, oh, we don't date. You know, we don't date. And that makes sense for a place like Norway and Sweden. It's such a small fucking country. It's like you don't date because you know everyone already, so there's no need to date. but they do date. Everyone dates, even though if they say they don't date, you date because you have to figure out whether or not you're going to like the person. And when you meet to figure out if you like them or not, if you're going to be with them long term, that's called dating. You know, what you do before marriage. You don't just see the guy you like on the tram, kick off your heels, run over, just start riding him. You know, you're on top of him. You're like, oh, so what's your name? Oh, Hans, nice to meet you. Like you gotta figure out if it's going to work or not. So that's the dating side of it. But Scandinavians do tend to date a bit backwards. And from the stories that we heard from them and from what we've heard from them personally, just after the shows, they would rather get coffee with someone the day after. So they would just go out, meet someone, take them home that night, have sex with them, find out if they're good in bed. And then
they have coffee.
And then have coffee with them later. And
interesting.
And so that whole one night stand, they don't even think of it as like a one night stand. They're just like, this is just what we do. It's just like, life's short, have fun. But it's easy in a society like that, where it's high trust society. You know, you can be a slut when you have free healthcare. Give me a total whore. When you go to the doctor, you don't have to pay for it. And it's just, you know, it's just more of a trustworthy society. So, you know, you can, we had a story of a girl at our show in Oslo who was like kind of a bit desperate, having a night where she wanted to hook up, and she got all dressed up and didn't work out with the one guy she wanted. So she just went out for a walk and late at night, and then met this guy sitting on a park bench. You know, and who was like, kind of found out he was like kind of like a homeless musician, you know, kind of like a drifter, but an artist in a way. And she was debating whether or not to take this guy home. And then she did, because he's like, well, you know, I'm Norwegian, social democrat, like I have to, you know, help out people and give them a place to stay. And she's trying to figure out whether or not she's going to sleep with this guy, you know, and it's just. That story just would not happen in so many places. Like in India, that would never happen. Most of America, you would never hear anything like that. But that's one of the things you could do in Norway. Just take a homeless drifter and you'd not feel threatened at all. And, you know, sit on his face.
Yeah. I mean, you traveled so many countries and you heard so many stories. Is there one advice you could give?
Yes. I do believe in love still.
That's beautiful.
I still believe in love. And that's one of the things that I was dealing with recently, because now I'm in Estonia, of all places. And after all of this kind of fuckboying around, I realized I needed to go to fuckboy rehab. And the what I thought was, starting off in San Francisco up until, you know, recently, was that once I find the one, it'll be easy to settle down and to commit. And I'm realizing now that that's much more difficult than I thought it'd be, because you just have like this habit of way of being as a boy, as a fuck boy, especially, where you're just constantly trying and onto the next thing, onto the next country. And then you find someone you like, and then you realize you still have a lot of those same habits and behaviors. And so now I have to go to basically fuckboy rehab. And actually, that's what my new show is about. Going to fuckboy rehab.
About fuckboy rehab?
Fuckboy rehab, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like fuckboys should have no sympathy for fuckboys. People, they definitely deserve all the hate that they get. But at the same time, there are a lot of fuckboys and there's no help for them. No one cares. It's just like, he's a fuckboy. He's a piece of shit. I hate fuckboys. Don't date fuckboys. It's like, yeah, all right, great. but you keep dating them and they're around. So who's going to help the fuckboys? You know, is there any help for the fuckboys? No, there's just a bunch of songs on the radio about how much these girls hate these fuckboys. Like every pop song through the ages, it's always like, he's a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit. Broke my heart. He's a piece of shit. He's so much better. I'm so much better without him, that motherfucker. It's like every song is basically like something like that. And so, and recently I've had to read a lot of books about that. And I had to find someone who was patient enough to deal with the remnants of my fuckboy past. For example, making plans with a fuckboy is so open-ended because they don't like to be tied down. They don't like to be committed. So, you know, simple plans like, you know, we've been dating me and this Estonian girl for like 5-6 months now. And like I'm in bed and we had such a great night. And then she's like, oh, I'll see you tomorrow. I was like, yeah, well, hang on tomorrow. Yeah, you know, yeah, whatever. You know? And we see each other like every day. But still, I have this like non-committal, like, maybe I won't, you know, maybe I'll just hop on a plane to somewhere, you know, even though it's a pandemic, can't fly anywhere. It's just like, I just can't just be tied down to a plan, even though we see each other every single day. So the next day comes and she's like, oh, weren't you over? And I was like, yeah, did we? And I forgot. we didn't say. And then the old me is like, you know, blame her, make her feel. It's like, but you didn't pick a time, so it's your fault, you know? And I said that in my head. I was like, no, we're an adult now. And it took so much like twisting mentally just to do the right thing. And it was just like, and the right thing was, I'm sorry. We did agree to meet up and I should have made plans and just agreed on a time and just texted you and have let you know, just checked in. Because we were texting the whole day. And then she's like, where are you? It's 7 o'clock. And I think she did that on purpose. She wanted to see if I have figured it out. And she like a little toddler learning to take his first steps. Mm-hmm. Let's see if he can learn how to follow through on plans on a consistent basis. And I'm getting better and better at it. And she has patience. And my advice would be one piece of dating advice is to date someone who has an attachment style that is complementary to yours. And I'll explain what that is. There's a book called Attached, the Science of Attachment Theory. Have you heard of it or read it?
No, it's super interesting. I'm listening with really big ears. It's so interesting.
I love this book.
Okay, can you just totally?
Yeah, it's called Attached, something like that. Attached, the Theory of Attachment. And a lot of pop psychology books are just complete garbage because it's one person who went through it and they're like, I dated someone like this. And now I'm writing a book and I'm coming up with my own names for these things and it's not backed in research. And then you read it and you're like, oh, I hate myself. I'm this person. But it's just an anecdote. This is backed by evidence in experiments, which is great. And it basically says humans have one of three attachment styles. And it comes obviously from your parents and how your parents treated you. And it's secure, meaning, you know, you don't feel threatened if your partner is going to go hang out with friends. You're basically what it sounds like, secure. And then there's anxiety. I might be fucking these up. Anxiety, anxious, meaning like, you know, if your partner goes away on a trip, you're worried if they're going to be cheating on you. You are constantly seeking their attention and craving their attention. And then there's a avoidant, which is you're pushing them away. You're wanting your own space. You want to do your own thing. You want to go your own way. That's me. So I was listening to Fleetwood Mac earlier. I'm the avoidant style, and avoidance and anxious tend to attract each other because avoidants who don't want to be tied down, want to do their own thing, are constantly on the move and need their space and whatever. And anxious are constantly looking for validation and reassurance because both sort of didn't get that from in their childhood, you know. Avoidance who would have parents who might be overbearing, or in my case, a father who's quite domineering. And so my reaction as a child was to just avoid that in general, avoid intimacy, avoid love, just run away, go travel to Europe, go bang all these guys, try to bang all these girls. And that became kind of my attachment style. And I was dating someone before, Estonian lady, who was anxious. And, you know, she also was missing the love, as much love as she would have liked to have as a kid. And so she was constantly craving it. And as a result, she would look for people who would provide her validation, but who would also leave. So like she would want that validation. Like, I want someone who doesn't want me, because as a kid, I wanted love that I never got.
Yeah. And those two, that was me.
And those two, those two attachment styles tend to find each other. And it tends to be like very hot, very passionate, very dramatic. And you're just like, just chasing each other in circles, and it just never works until one can change to become more secure. And it's unlikely that that'll happen, because it's so difficult to change behavior. It can, but what's an easier thing to do is to find someone who's just a complementary attachment style. So, secure and secure work together, according to this book, and secure and anxious work together, and secure and avoidant work together. Mm-hmm. The girl I'm dating right now, and it's been the most successful relationship to date, she's secure. And when I was just at her father's place, and when you see the father and how he is, and he's just this, he's Estonian. Yeah. So he's not like, you know, hey, how are you, buddy? Mm-hmm. He's just kind of quiet, but he's so excited. He's not over the top, but he's just excited. And he's talking about his garden, how he just got zucchini. You know, and he's showing his daughter. He's like, come here, come here. He's like, look at this zucchini. Look at this. Look at that. You know, and he's not like overly, like my dad was like very charismatic, like very big personality, but, you know, he wouldn't give a fuck about a zucchini. And he wouldn't be so excited to like show me, you know, but that, those little interactions, those like, hey, daughter, come here. Still, she's like 30. And he's like, just the love between them. And,
that's beautiful.
Really helped her mature into a woman who is secure in her own love and her own self-worth, and allows us to date because she's patient. So yeah, that would be my advice, is to just find someone who's complementary dating, complementary attachment style.
It's so interesting what you said. I was the anxious type, and I put myself out of dating. I still am because I was so sick of it. I first wanted to work on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, because now I'm at a point in my life where I never felt so like really being in myself, like really grounded in myself. And it's like, it's hard to describe. I never had this be so present and feel so safe just with myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very curious how it will evolve from that point. Because I think I finally, and it took really long time, and it was very, very hard, because I think I finally changed from anxious to secure. But I still think that their anxious parts will kick in. But I also believe that I can handle them and say, oh, here you are, little demon, come into my arms, have a tea, I see you, you don't have to worry. And really curious how this will unfold in my life.
Yeah.
I really need to get this book. And because we talk for an hour now, if people want to have more advice or more stories, I want to hear how you transform from a fuckboy to... into what? Into a loving person who wants to commit.
Yeah.
Where can we see you, and where can we experience Rickman?
Well, I just want to say for your transition, it sounds like you're getting sex change surgery, but for your becoming from transitioning like anxious to secure. I mean, it seems like you've gotten such a handle on it just from everything I've read about you online and listening to your podcast and all that, you know? So it's one of those things that's just ongoing, and it's almost like you'll never really arrive. Like you get
No, because it will never go away. Yeah. And this is also something which was a relief. If you, because people tell you all the time, oh, you have to leave this old stuff. You have to let go. You need to leave this behind. No, you can't. Some things are so I always say it's written in your soul DNA. Mm-hmm. You can't get rid of it. It's a major part of who you are, because these experiences were so hard and so and made you to also to this person who you are right now in other ways. You will never forget it. And my therapist said, and that's a beautiful picture. She said, listen, you are driving a bus. You can imagine you are driving a bus. This is the bus. This is the journey of your life, and you are on the wheel, and some, and you have also some people on the bus, and they are in the back, and some are very nice, and you're really looking forward when they come up to the front and visit you, and some are really nasty, but they will never go off. So you have to learn how to communicate with the nasty stuff,
yeah.
with the nasty people, and don't. And the most important thing, you don't have to be afraid of it. And in my experience, and I do this now for years, it's not like a process which I just have started, just found out. But it's as more as you integrate them and as you see them, and also. I try to welcome them. This is really what I do. When I see something's coming up, I do have a kind of curiosity and say, oh, hi, there you are. Mm-hmm. What is your need? And then I really visualize, and this is where my tantric practice maybe is very helpful, because we do visualize a lot, and also we work with energy in our body. And I do visualize it, and like I hug it. I hug the feeling. And also it's when I hug the feeling, or if I hug the neediness, it's also a physical thing in my body. I know it sounds weird, but this is how I experience it.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much better. Mm-hmm. And it's not about to get rid of, or maybe, and it's more a transformation, which is really an integration. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of beautiful.
I like that.
Yeah.
And I like that your therapist gave you the analogy of a bus. And I'm just imagining this this bus on the Autobahn.
Yeah.
The negative feelings come in the back.
You can go so fast, they're just screaming.
Yeah. You always gotta bring it back to
just
the
want to survive.
Gotta bring it back to the Autobahn.
Oh, you're driving so fast that there it looks
no. No, you will not change. You will stay. Okay. You will stay the same person.
To find me, the best way to find me, I think, is just if they want to see the story online on YouTube, it's just Google first time dating a German girl, and then they'll find it, or first time dating a German woman, and they'll find me. And in addition to that, the socials are Rockman Blake, and then to find the show. Story Party Tour, True Dating Stories. Mm-hmm. And if you just go to, just Google that or go to the website storyparty.co, you'll see all the European tour dates all over Germany and Austria and Switzerland and all those other places.
And we see you in July in Germany, right?
July in Germany. Yep. And then Köln and Berlin, Frankfurt.
Oh, all over. It's going to be good.
Perfect. Good. Perfect. Hope to see you there. And I will put everything in the show notes. Rockman, thank you so much for taking your time. Thank you so much for your advice. And also thank you for that. It was not only funny, it was also kind of deep. And I really like your transformation and your insights. And so interesting. Can't wait to hear the funny part of the transformation from a fuckboy.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's your new program, right?
You'll hear about it in Hamburg.
Perfect.
For better, for worse. So yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the interview. And I'll see you soon.
Thank you. See you soon.
Tschüss. Auf Wiedersehen.
Das war eine neue Folge von House of Grace. Ich hoffe, diese Episode hat dir gefallen. Und falls das der Fall gewesen ist, freue ich mich sehr, wenn du zum Beispiel auf Apple Podcast eine Bewertung hinterlassen würdest. Und vielleicht hast du ja auch Lust, House of Grace zu folgen. Das kannst du zum Beispiel bei Spotify, Apple Podcast oder dieser tun. Mich persönlich, Sandra von Zaubjenski, findest du auf Instagram. Den Link dazu gibt es in den Shownotes. Und ich freue mich riesig über Feedback, Kommentare, Anregungen, auch per E-Mail an podcast@house-of-grace.de. Alles Liebe, eure Sandra.